Well, she's a transplanted Montrealer. She's now a San Franciscan, and her name is Barbara Golden. She's standing by, ready to step up to the microphone, but first, let us get acquainted with her music. This is a song called Flaming Toast. The music of Barbara Golden, a 1981 recording, a song called Flaming Toast, and I am joined by Barbara in the studio. Welcome back to Brave New Waves.
Hi.
Pleasure to have you. When we called you to contact you to come and do this interview, you said it would be a great opportunity to get out of the house. And I was just wondering, is it nice to come back home? Can you, in fact, come back home?
I guess, but, you know, in certain ways you can, and, you know, Thomas Wolfe said you can't go home again. So in certain ways that's true, but it is nice to see my parents and old friends and my son. I have a son of 24, so it's great to see them.
How often do you come back to Montreal?
I come back every 6 months. Mm-hmm. I used to have a boyfriend in New York. Well, actually one in New York and one in Woodstock, whose names will be unknown for now. So I used to make more pilgrimages and then bop on up to Montreal. But now I have a boyfriend in California, so I stay home more often.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever run into folks that you used to know from the old neighborhood who ask you, what have you been up to, Barbara? There must be so much that you want to tell them. And
there's so many rumors about me because, you know, I write so many songs that are kind of raunchy that I think that sometimes the press about me is worse than what I actually am. Like, really, you know, I'm really a homebody and I like to cook and everything.
So do you have a reputation then in your old neighborhood? In
Montreal? Possibly, yeah, I think I have a reputation. Except for the people who know me. They know I just read books and cook a lot.
Yeah. There's so much I want to talk to you about because you've done so much over the last 15 years. But one question I want to ask you is, if you had to decide between doing one thing, be it being a radio host, performance art, music, poetry, illustrations, is there one thing that you perhaps enjoy the most over anything else? And if you had to choose one of these, what would it be?
Yeah, I really think that Well, I would have to say two. I just couldn't give up being a radio host. I love the control of it, and I'm my own board operator.
You know? Wow.
So that's really fun. I take call-ins, and if I get bored by the answers, I'm really mean, and I just, you know, busy with my board. So it's a blast. So that I can do that pretty easily, you know. If you have it, you have it on that level. But I think the thing I would keep on doing always is playing piano and singing, and I think that I've strayed from it in a way. I make movies and videos, and I think they're okay. I love them, and they've been, one especially, Take Me Out to the Ball Game, has been real successful. But I think that, and I want to try to concentrate more on writing songs and playing piano and singing them. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's what I did when I started out, and I've strayed from it.
Well, let's go back a bit and tell us about these radio programs, which you mentioned.
I live in the Bay Area, and you know that there's a wonderful listener-sponsored radio there called KPFA. It's Pacifica Radio. It's like WBAI in New York. It's their sister station, and there's one in D.C. And they're wonderful stations, and Charles Amarkanian, whose music you might have played on this show, is the music director. And I went to Mills College in 79 to get a master's in composition and so on. And I studied with Bob Ashley and Terry Riley, and I got to know all these people. And I think Charles saw me one day at some concert talking very animatedly to Bob Ashley, and it must have dawned on him that I knew a lot of people. And I got a call from him the next day saying, do you want to do a radio show? We've got a wonderful slot for you. 3 a.m. to 7 a.m., you know, how do you start?
Prime time.
In the cellar, right? In prime time. So I called a crack o' dawn, and I loved it. It was just terrific. And in those days, it was 84, and you could sort of say whatever you wanted, especially at that hour. And I was very frank.
What was the concept behind the show?
The concept was really new. It was party time, but it was a lot of new music. It was a lot of the computer music that was coming out, and performance art and stuff like that. So I was pretty eclectic then, but I had a hell of a lot of computer music, performance music, Bob Ashley, Terry Riley, minimalism. Paul Drescher came on the show and did about 5 hours of live. He brought about five, six reverse cassettes. Mm-hmm. and did a live mix on the air. I did a 7-hour Bob Ashley special from 12 in the morning till 7 in the morning. I just did one on Fred Jeffsky, mm-hmm. and that was a trip. And Willie Winant came into the studio and did a live flower pot piece that Frederick had just written for him. And I had an interview with him from his hotel room in San Francisco. So stuff like that.
How much of your music do you play on your show?
Oh, not a hell of a lot. I mean, you know what it's like to be a host. You can't be too much of an egomaniac. You know, you're...
Or you can be.
You know, it's enough of a power trip anyway. Once in a while, I'll play my music. But I'm going to be on Over the Edge. My band, we're going to be on Negative Land Leader. Do you know Negative Land?
Of course, yeah.
Well, he always came on before me, and he's given me one of his slots on KPFA, so I got to know him well, Don Joyce, and we're going to be on Over the Edge on his show, which is every Thursday night at midnight on KPFA.
Now,
so our music will be on.
Did the Negative Land cassette JamCon 84 come out of the program which he does now before you?
Because sure.
That type of radio is so inventive and progressive.
Yeah. I just talked to my boyfriend, and he said, he's back there in Berkeley, and he said, I was on Negative Land last night. He said, I cranked up the computer, the TVs, the radios, and he did some loops and stuff, and he said he was on for quite a while, mm-hmm. so he was all excited. Yeah, I would imagine that a lot of it came out of that.
Mm-hmm. I was also happy to read that you were one of the first radio announcers in America to get the Shags started on college radio in the United States. They've always been a favorite of mine. Do you also play music?
I love the
like
Shags.
The Shags?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I have my consultants, you know, and a guy named Mark Weinstein is my one of my big consultants. He runs a record store, and he's a great percussionist. And I just talk to everyone I know, and I raid their particular record collections and say, what's going on? You know, if I don't know, I want to know. Mm-hmm. What's the latest thing happening or whatever? Or what's the funkiest thing? Not the latest thing, but what's really happening, you know?
Mm-hmm. Does that lend itself to the composition of your music, hearing so much from so many different people
sure.
and playing it on the radio?
Sure, it gives me ideas. I know what I like, and then I always knew sort of what the emotion I wanted to get somehow. I love making people laugh, and I would really now, though, like to make people cry, too, you know? I'd really like to start writing some more soulful stuff. I'm lazy. I thought when I started out I'd be writing string quartets and symphonies, you know, and I'm writing Tampon Rag and things like that. But Pink Pleasure is a little more serious, mm-hmm. so that's fun.
Did you have a certain epiphany that made you want to write sad songs as opposed to happy ones?
Not really. I don't know. I'm not sure. I like the idea of the range, you know, and laughter and tears are very close anyway. I want to at least be, you know, some emotion, not just, you know, middle of the road. It's far from, I have no problem with that. It's not very middle of the road, mm-hmm. I'm sure.
Let's talk for a while about cooking, if we might, because the book...
I love to cook.
The book that you released called Home Cooking was mm-hmm. was a collection of musical scores, illustrations, and recipes.
Mm-hmm.
Were these your recipes, or were they collected from musicians in the area? Or?
No, they're my favorite recipes. I always threw huge parties and dinners a lot, and I always kept journals with poems, and I'd write down the lyrics of my songs, and there were scores, and there was music, and then there were watercolors. Everything was all jumbled up. So three people who founded Burning Books, Melody Sumner, Michael Sumner, and Kathleen Birch, said, Barbie has to write a cookbook. It's got to be a cookbook. And they were the ones who said, we'll publish it, get your recipes together. And they're my recipes and a few of my mother's.
What are some of the recipes in the book?
Well, the one that everyone makes is just plain roasted chicken with potatoes and Mum's apple crisp. That's like apple crumble. Real easy. My favorite is, I used to do it with veal, but veal's really politically incorrect to eat these days. Probably everything is, you know, every type of thing that was alive. But anyway, I make it with chicken now, but it's cordon bleu with a butter lemon anchovy sauce. And Alexander Coburn named it as one of his 50 favorite cookbooks. One of his 8 million favorite, one of his 50, he's a columnist, mm-hmm. really great one. And he made a list in House and Garden, I think 86 or 87. And it was one of his favorites. It's in a cookbook collection, and, you know, it's just about sold out. And we might have to go into a second printing with it. So that was nice. People are ordering it from Korea and Japan.
And it was reviewed in Home and Cooking magazine?
It was reviewed in House... what is it called? House and Garden. Yeah. You know, it's like one of those fancy, glossy American magazines, you know? Pretty hoity-toity.
What did they say about the book?
They said La Vie Bohème, raunchy, you know, that kind of thing.
What did they make of the musical scores and the illustrations?
They said something about a cookbook that could be banned in Boston because the songs are like, I always say they're tasty recipes and tasteless songs. It's like songs like Boner Boy and, you know, all about the Pope.
A title which I always blush at when I think of.
Doing things with the cardinals, etc., etc.
Right.
You know, it's pretty silly.
The readership of this book extended far beyond just like the avant-garde audience. You were getting letters from truckers and chefs and, mm-hmm. and butchers.
Mm-hmm.
That surprise you?
Sort of. But I really like having a range of acquaintances and friends. Like, I would hate just to think that I'd go to a yuppie bar to drink. You know, I want to do that. But my favorite bar is a Mexican bar on East 14th Street in East Oakland, and that's where I'm a regular, you know. Mm-hmm. And I just like the gamut. I like to talk to people. If I had to hang out with artists all the time, I'd kill myself. But if I had to hang out with school teachers all the time, I would be equally as stultified, you know, and dismal.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, it didn't surprise me too much.
What were some of the best letters that you received, best correspondence?
Oh, God. I'm not sure. Just,
who was the butcher who wrote you, for instance?
Well, he didn't... See, those are all comments. We collected comment. We have a sheet of comments. Sometimes people never use the book and they just read the sheet of comments. I just collected comments from people. The butcher just said, you know, we said, what do you... My publisher said, what do you think of Barbara? And the butcher said, she buys a lot of chicken. That's what the butcher said, you know? It wasn't as if it was a very pithy remark. And, God, I don't know. What are some of the things? Oh, Barbara's a surprise. She'd bring Harper Valley to a boil. She's a born-again artist. What are some of the good things? But Terry Riley always said to me, what are you doing at Mills College? You should be on the Mike Douglas show. Bob Ashley said, Barbara's one of my, you're one of my stories now, Barbara. And stuff like that,
great.
You know.
Is cooking a cathartic experience for you?
To me, it's like a meditation. I wrote this in the preface of the book. I don't want a food processor at all. I sit there at the table and I watch a soap opera or crank up a good tape and I just chop. You know, it's like meditation. I swim a lot of laps, and it's the same idea. I swim really slowly, about an hour and a quarter, every other day at least. And it's just, you know, it just sort of blots out everything else. You're just doing it. And then people like it so much, including myself, except that I'm like a little chubette here. But anyway.
People can't see
it. We won't discuss that. Oh, I love it. I've had naked people on the show sometimes. They say, oh, they're naked now.
Of course, no one believes you in radio.
They do. They all believe me.
Oh, they do.
People phone and they ask my guests, they say, what does Barbara look like, you know? And sometimes the guests really are ridiculous. You know, they go, well, you know, I'm not even getting into what they say, but, you know.
We were talking about, Augusta LePay from doing an interview mm-hmm. Here before. She told me once that she received a letter from a couple in Minneapolis who said that they like to make love to her voice and wrote her and invited her to Minneapolis anytime if she wanted to participate. Do you get that sort of response from your listeners?
Yeah, I mostly get, I like it. It's not too freaky, you know. It's very nice. Some people say that they're dozing, you know, because it's really late. They're dozing when the music's on, and then when my voice comes on, they wake up and they like it so much. And someone phoned the show and they said, you know, the way they have those 24-hour preachers and everything, or 24-hour selling shows, you know, on TV.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, they said there should be a 24-hour Barb show, and I think I told Giles Amrakani, and he really rolled his eyes. I don't quite think he concurred, but, you know, now, I guess you have to be there.
A federal organization at one point came down hard on you. Did they not for the content of your program? Did they censor you?
Luckily, they didn't come down on me. They came down on our a Pacifica station, KPFK, in Los Angeles, and they were doing a serious show about AIDS. And they used a word, which I won't say, but fist, F, and then it ends in R. And it wasn't to be salacious or anything, because it was about AIDS and it was really serious. And so they came down hard on them. I never got called up. Once we got the letters that said, cool it, just cool your jets, I did right away.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had to be
Was it difficult
smart.
For you to change?
Yes. Yeah. Because it was funny. I was not to people who don't understand me say, oh, you're being salacious and raunchy and rowdy to shock people. And I said, I'm not. It's funny. For one thing, it's part of life. You know, you're not allowed to talk about, you know, making love, all of the slang words for making love or the slang words for excreting. Not that I want to, but you know what I'm saying.
Sure.
They're like basic to your home life, you know, and you're not allowed to talk about them. So first, I must say it really cramped my style. And then I've had, you have to be smart, you know, you have to work around it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, you know, I'm like a walking thesaurus. I read a lot, so my vocabulary isn't too bad. So you can get around it, you know.
What do you make,
took a while.
What do you make of the latest ragings by the PMRC and the whole controversy with the Two Live Crew band and the threats to sticker rock albums?
I think it's just ridiculous, you know. People have a choice not to listen to it. I think I've heard and read a lot of the lyrics, and some of them aren't great. They're anti-women, and I don't like them particularly. But I think that all it did was inflame people to buy the records, and their sales have never been better. And I think censorship is wrong, no matter what. Because I heard Whoopi Goldberg on Arsenio, I think, and he asked the same thing, and she said, I loved her answer, because she said, well, right now they don't like Two Live Crew, or they don't like this, but soon they'll say they don't like a certain, if you wear a certain blouse or a certain shirt, or your hair's a certain way, they're not going to really like that, or if you're a certain color or a certain religion or whatever. And it just keeps, it's insidious, and censorship's wrong. I mean, Ulysses wouldn't make it now, you know. It sucks. In the mornings, I eat.
It will be infinitely repeat.
That was called My Pleasure, and that was Barbara Golden, and I'm sitting talking with Barbara. And I want to ask you about your origins in Montreal and the time spent between Montreal, being with your family, mm-hmm. and Mills College. You had a husband and a son, and you decided, I take it, one day to pursue other interests.
Mm-hmm.
Where did that notion come from?
Well, I just knew that I was bored with being a school teacher, and I really would, you know, be out on trips and look at people who were on their own and just want to run off with them or something. I just got a little bored. And I really did. I always admired people who wrote books. I knew some novelists, some poets, and Leonard Cohen was a contemporary. I didn't know him, but I knew people who did. I know him now. I've interviewed him for the show, by the way. But I just knew I wanted something different. And so what I did, it's a classic. I just enrolled in a few music courses at Concordia. It was Loyola then. I was at 2140 Bishop. And I just wanted to take some, you know, those, what do they call it, like music analysis. And I thought, oh, I'll be a historian. I'll teach. And Phil Cohn, who was the head of music at the time, he said, oh, you have to take some theory, you've got to take composition. And I'm thinking, theory? Composition? That's boring. I don't want to take that. And he said, yeah, you'll like it. And my teacher was Kevin Austin. And it was like a bolt of fire because he made the whole class go to the SMCQ concerts, you know, Société Musique Contemporaine de Québec. Mm-hmm. And for the first time, I started hearing Berio, you know, hearing Kathy Berberian do Berio live, and hearing Ligeti pieces, you know, and contemporary music. And I went insane. I wanted to be a composer. I mean, it was just a quick love affair. And I started playing with Metamusic, which was Kevin's group at the time.
What did you play?
It was great because there were all these people who had synthes at the time. This was like middle 70s, 76, 77. And people had synthesizers, and there were all kinds of tape delay systems set up. But then we were given... we just played acoustic instruments like violas, violins, percussion, piano, you name it, banging on the radiators, whatever. And it was all really amplified, tape delay, processed stuff. So it sounded totally terrific. And we were just able to improvise and go crazy. And I went off the deep end. I was so excited. You know, it was like the most thrilling period of my life. So that's what happened. And I just wanted to be a musician, mainly a composer. And then I started, very early on in, I started writing songs. So I always liked to sing, but I never really did. And I can't sing, but I sing, you know. You just do it if you want to. Mm-hmm. Who's going to stop you? You're your own boss.
Uh-huh. That's really quite a courageous decision, considering that you
have a
husband and a son.
I was really scared. And my son really, he was smart. He was 10, but he knew that I was really getting very wild. And it was like kind of the end of the hippie movement, but I became a hippie in full force. And he said, "Mom, when parents separate, does a kid always have to go with the mother?" And I said, "No, not really." And his dad was great, so he stayed with the dad. But boy, did my family, I'm from... You know, not my parents, they were very supportive, but the cousins and, you know, people, wow, selfish, she's really sick, you know, blah, blah, blah. Now, you know, settled down, so I think I'm a little okay, except my dresses are pretty tight and low cut still and short and, you know.
And leopard skin, I'm glad.
I love leopard skin. I should have brought you, I was like on the cover of a magazine called Crack Magazine. Mm-hmm. And it's a full length. I have a leopard leotard. I like leopard. It's like kind of a back shot, and I'm looking over my shoulder. And it's pretty fun. It's pretty funky.
Whose idea was it for you to attend Mills College?
Well, I was separated by then. I had gotten a BFA from Concordia in music, and I didn't know what to do, and because I was living in a house on Pierce Street right by St. Catherine, and it was splitting up. People were getting masters and going off to Holland or whatever, and I said to one of the guys, "What should I do?" There were two guys named Brian that Karen and I lived with. And I said, "What should I do now?" And he said, "Get an MA." You know, so I looked in all
any graduate student's response.
I looked in all the catalogs from every music school, and I didn't have much background. And the only ones that seemed reasonable and humane, and really kind of intermedia, were York University, Wesleyan, and Mills College. And I thought, well, Terry Riley's there, and Bob Ashley, and David Behrman, and Blue Jean Tierney. Hell, I'm going to go there. And then it turned out David Rosenboom had just moved there, and he was my piano teacher for 3 years. I got private lessons free. I got a little scholarship. So that was good. Mm-hmm. So that's, and I figured I'll go to Mills, and they were pretty pro, it was women's college, and I thought, this sounds like fun. And 79 to 81 was really the kind of flowering as far as my composing and everything.
Sounds like it was an incredible community of musicians. You must have interacted a lot and played
there
all
are,
together.
There are about 15 of us. The people that were in 81 from Flaming Toast were still together to this day collaborating on pieces. Jay Cloyd and John Bischoff and Mark Trail. These are people that are in a computer network group called The Hub. But they were the League of Automatic Composers. Sam Ashley, Ben Azarm, myself, Kay Ashley. I think I was the only woman. I didn't feel like it, though. Because, I mean, they really didn't treat me like a woman. I was a person. It was great.
And you roomed with Sam Ashley?
Yeah, it was Sam Ashley and Bob Weir, but not the Bob Weir from The Grateful Dead. We were always getting calls for him, though. My Gamelon group just did a benefit for with Grateful Dead was there.
You're getting calls from Bob Weir of the Grateful Dead?
No, for Bob Weir, because we lived with a guy named Bob Weir, who's a painter. Okay. He's living in New York now. So it was quite remarkable. But I finally met Bob Weir and Jerry Garcia. They were like, where you are, and I'm busy banging on my onklung instrument, you know, in my Gamelon. We were playing a little party. And these people were paying, you know, $50 or $100. It was some benefit for, you know, the Save the Rainforest in California and the Pacific Forest, actually. And people were saying to me, there's Jerry Garcia right by you. And I didn't even really know what Jerry Garcia and Bob looked like. But everybody else was flipped out. But then I missed a note, you know, because I thought, oh, my God, Jerry Garcia and Bob Weir. It was really fun.
Did you talk to them?
No, I just looked at them. And then they had, you know, that flavor, Cherry Garcia, you know, Ben and Jerry ice cream.
I'm sorry, I don't. Is that a California thing?
Yeah, but they have it here. It's really good ice cream. But anyway, they had ice cream bars. No, ice cream on stick. They had Cherry Garcia with chocolate around it on stick. And Jerry Garcia was eating a Cherry Garcia.
Wow.
It was really
That's like the Babe Ruth candy bar or the Reggie Jackson candy bar.
Exactly.
There you go. Now, was it the first musical event that you staged the MUSIC concerts?
Yeah, it was the first and last. I did this with my publisher, my soon-to-be publisher, Melody Sumner. I don't know why we did it. We had this idea that we should make a music festival, and because I got this backer. I guess I should have taken the money and run and made it. Now I would take the money. He had seen me perform, and he said, I want to back you in something, like maybe a cafe or an event or something. And instead of saying a record, we did a music festival. MUSIC stands for Marvelous Unlimited Sounds in Concert.
Naturally.
We had t-shirts and everything. And we just got on the phone. I don't know how we did it. Melody said she doesn't know how we did it. We phoned everybody. We phoned, and they came. Phoned Joan LaBarbera, Bob Ashley, because we knew them. And we'd phone people and say, so-and-so said they're doing it. So will you? And like nobody had said anything, right? That's how you have to start, you know? Then once you get two people, everybody will do it. George Lewis flew in from Paris. And Diamond de Galas, and the residents, and
did you get a chance to meet the residents?
I know a few of them.
Wow!
I said to one of them,
they're human, right?
Yeah, they're really human. One has really a lot of hair on his ears. And once we met a few of them. We met one. No, it wasn't a few. I think it was H. And we met H in a bar. We were trying to get him to sponsor nuts. We wanted him to buy nuts to hand out as treats for the patrons who came to music, but he wouldn't do it.
What kind of nuts?
Oh, cashews or something, you know. Don Buchla.
You ended up with 32 performers, didn't you?
Yeah, Reese Chatham. He's going to be in New Music America, right? Lots of people. Chris Brown. All our friends. Blue Jean Tierney.
Right.
Who else? I don't know.
Your job was to organize all these performers, get them on stage, and get the venues together?
Yeah.
Will you do it again?
Well, I would, but Melody wouldn't. I don't know if I'd ever do it again. I think I'd like to just take that kind of money and put it into myself or something, frankly. I need a facelift. No, just kidding.
Canada and the northern U.S., Barbara doesn't need a facelift. She's just kidding.
Thanks.
Did the Whig Band then follow soon after the music festival?
Well, this visual artist, Johanna Pothick, had seen me sing quite a bit, and she came up to me. She's a fabulous woman of 6 foot tall, and she was blonde, and now she's got flaming red hair. It's great. I just have to get used to the fact she's redhead. And she said, let's perform together sometime. So there was an exhibition at a musical exhibition, a series called Working Live at the Art Institute. And we knew the people who were producing it, and they said, put in a proposal, and we did, called The Rite of Kong. And it was pretty feminist. She's a visual artist, so she makes all these props. We've got big spears, which we call penis spears, and we bang them on the floor and talk about Neanderthal behavior. And there's always a few men that walk out. The first song, they're out the door. But we have a nice little following in the Bay, in San Francisco, in the Bay Area, and we do a show once a year. We have videotapes and movies and songs and props and all kinds of stuff.
I'm wondering, because of your reputation, did you have mostly women go to see you originally, and now it's
no, more men? No, no. We always had, luckily, all my friends. Now I have a lot of men friends, and they just saw the humor. They weren't threatened. They didn't give a damn, and they loved it. Mm-hmm. And we have a really nice mixed following. When I do things here, just small things, it's mostly, you know, women. I think the men are afraid or something. I don't know. I don't care.
They have a lot to learn.
But, no, I think it's always been a kind of a mixed crowd, because we're not rabidly feminist. We wear corsets and spike heels to perform in. So we're, you know.
There's that burlesque quotient.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. You got it. It's that cabaret burlesque quotient. We want to laugh, but we definitely have access to grind. And the new show that we're doing is called Filth, or the New Censors, the New Prohibition, we're calling it, actually, because we're incensed about censorship and so on. So we really are doing stuff.
What's in the show? What's it about?
There's one song that's called Seven Bad Words, because I got the seven, which I definitely wouldn't say, you know, got the seven bad word list that's from like KPFA.
I thought you might have got it from George Carlin, you know,
Identical. Yeah, that is it. And you can't believe what some of them are. Like, when's this, you know? Right. You can't say that. Breast. I mean, but that other word for breast, you mm-hmm. can't say in America anyway. I don't think it's the same in Canada.
No.
But anyway, it's ridiculous, you know. So the visuals will have those words, see? And we're going to have them come in out of Jesse Helms' mouth and everything. But then the song, it's just we're wearing grass skirts, and we're seeing this Hawaiian thing. We're just doing real body parts, like buttocks and thighs. I'm making it sound lascivious. We're doing every possible body part, but with the real names, you know, not the slang. Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, the visuals will be this bombardment of the forbidden seven words. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the songs. And some others. I don't remember.
Now, because you do so many different things, I'm wondering if there are fans of your chamber music, for instance, that can't understand why doing stuff like the mm-hmm. Wig Band, or mm-hmm. and whether that disturbs you, whether you'd rather have everyone like everything, or whether you think that's
possible. Dad used to say, I don't know, this music is so beautiful and so calm. He'd say, the chamber music. Yeah. Why do you have to do that other stuff, you know? And yeah, some people like some and they don't like others, but it's the same with your dresses or something, you know, or whatever. They like some things and they don't like the others. I just feel that I have this eclectic range and I'm just going to go for it that way, you know, somehow. I can't really think of separating it. These songs just come to you and you just do them. Mm-hmm. Although, as I said, you know, the songs we've written lately are more thoughtful, and we're thinking more about what's going on in the world and trying to change things. But they're still, they're frivolous, but they're still pretty raunched out as far as the lyrics. We just have this bad habit of loving nasty words. It just makes us laugh. So we present the political stuff in a palatable way, and we're hoping it reaches a lot of people, you know. Like, we did a song called Liposuction, and it's all about liposuction, suck that fat right out of my thighs, suck that fat, just suck me dry, and tummy tuck, and collagen, shoot me, doctor, you know, give me some pride, and then love me, baby, but not too hard. Mm-hmm. And just how much we think that it's such a crock, you know, that people are selling women all this cosmetic surgery. That's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But it always
seems
to have...
Do you have friends who've had plastic surgery? Is it that, cause that seems like a big thing, you know, in California.
Yeah, well, everyone... you ask any woman and she'll say she's 10 to 20 pounds overweight, even if she weighs 98, you know. She's 10 to 20 pounds overweight, and she doesn't like her nose, or she doesn't like her chin. I don't, you know, I don't like every part of me, but I'm certainly not about to change it all. It's a crock, you know, especially since men don't have to do it much. And, mm-hmm. you know, they're not fed that kind of baloney. So we write about, we're venting our spleen. She and I write most of the lyrics, Johanna Poldig and myself.
Mm-hmm. Is there a carryover of the Wig Band's music to the music that you compose for films. There have been two films, Tia and Take Me Out to the Ball Game. Mm-hmm. First, let's talk about Tia. Where did that music come from?
A lot of that takes place in Mexico in 1906. So a friend of mine, Todd Manley, who's a percussionist, has a lot of records from that era, from Latin America, and even from that region, San Luis Potosi in Mexico, where the film is supposed to be shot. It's supposed to take place there. We're doing it in Northern California around Napa. It looks very dry and Mexico-like. So I'm writing some original music, and that'll be based on the style. And then we're actually transcribing some of the old records, and Todd's going to lay down several marimba tracks, probably about five or six, duplicating the music that's mm-hmm. from the records. So we'll get a beautiful soundtrack.
Is this style of music new to you? Is it something?
Yes, it's not something that I've really worked with much, and I haven't even. We're shooting the film now. It's mm-hmm. a film by Helen Prince, and I guess I'm kind of, we're all, about four of us, and we're just working with her, you know. She needs a new film, we give her new film, you know. She's shooting it in Super 8, believe it or not. And I'm doing, just shoot, taking some wild sound, too. But it's not really sync sound at all at this point.
Wild sound meaning like field recordings? That's
yeah, right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And what's going on. But it's mostly, it's a lot silent with voiceovers and narration. But we'll use some of the sound that we're getting. It's mm-hmm. a blast. We're filming up in Geyserville in the Russian River and in an old adobe in Petaluma, which is like a museum. And the state is just cooperating wonderfully wow. with us. We're having a blast.
And you'll be around when the cameras are rolling all the time?
Yeah, well, I've left now for a week or so, and then when I get back home, my boyfriend and I are going up to BC from Berkeley. We're taking his van and going up to British Columbia, and I think we're gonna try to get to the Queen Charlotte's. So I'm missing out on the end of the filming. But
find out if they listen to Brave New Waves in the Queen Charlotte Islands.
I will.
Okay.
I will. But Do you know that someone? I was doing my show. Someone got me from Vancouver, because I gave the phone number. I said, phone me up, I'm bored. Someone phones me from British Columbia, and he said, what is this? And I said, this is KPFA Berkeley. And he said, who are you? And I said, I'm Barbara Golden, or Barb. And he said, I've heard you on Brave New Waves. But that was like Vancouver. Well, I'll find out about the Queen Charlotte, so...